We're talking about race and justice in this hour. When a white cop kills an African-American man, it makes headlines, at least some of the time. But in many black neighborhoods, murder happens all the time and hardly ever makes the news. In 2006, journalist Jill Leovi started a blog called The Homicide Report. Her goal was to document every murder committed in L.A. County, and there were about 1,000. She spent 2 years embedded with homicide detectives, talking with victims' families, witnesses, and suspects. In her new book, Ghettocide, A True Story of Murder in America, she writes about how difficult some of those conversations were.
I don't know why some things get to me more than others, but in my book, I talk about the father of one of the main victims I discuss in the book, who's a homicide detective, a black homicide detective who's lost his son. He says to me in the course of reporting the book, it's something that he hadn't admitted earlier, which is that he lived in a high crime area, partly out of a sense of duty, that he believed a police officer should live in the community that he polices. And that completely undid me. That was one of the hardest things I have ever taken in one of these interviews for some reason. I guess it felt to me that it so implicated the whole city.
This reminds me of one of the moments in the book. You're describing an L.A. homicide detective, John Skaggs, is walking into the home of a woman named Barbara Pritchett, and her son, Devon Harris, has been murdered. I don't know, maybe you could describe that scene.
And he gives her the shoes of her son, which have been in an evidence locker. Paramedics generally take off shoes when they take people in an ambulance. And so they were at the crime scene. He brings them back to her in a box a year later when the case is ready to go to trial. And she smells the interior of the shoe. She holds it up to her face to get the stink of her son's feet in the shoe. And as she catches that smell and remembers him, and she collapses.
You focused a lot on the detective in that case who had to just stand there while she cried, and he's had to do that kind of thing a lot. So tell us about him, this guy John Skaggs. Why did you decide to focus on him?
By that time, I had very concrete ideas about the thesis of the book and what I wanted to explore, and that was specifically the vigor of the state's response to violence. And so he was somebody who really personified that, and particularly personified that in the case that I explore, in the murder of a colleague's son. So he's a highly energetic individual. He's a supremely confident individual. I say in my description of him that he's quite full of himself, but his arrogance is internal. It's no one else sees him as being particularly distinguished. He doesn't occupy a high position in the police department. He's not working in a division or precinct that's considered sort of central to the city's activities. It's kind of a backwater.
And we should mention that he's white.
And he's white. He works in Watts. And he's had years and years to kind of toil against this very high caseload, the high volume of cases, very consistent types of cases where it's black-on-black homicides, lots of them summed up as gang violence with reluctant witnesses. And so he becomes a real specialist in this particular kind of murder, which I argue is the plurality. It's the big concentration of murders in America, what we should be massing our best forces against, but what tends to end up being kind of marginal homicides simply because they're not the public's focus.
So let's talk about this one. The main case that you focus on and you follow Skaggs through this involves the young guy named Bryant Tinelli. He's walking down a street in South L.A. It's a warm spring evening, 2007. What happened?
A car pulls up in the corner. A young assailant jumps out of the car and points a gun and shoots him. He falls on the lawn, and somebody near the scene runs a couple blocks away and gets his father, Wally Tinelli, who's an LAPD homicide detective. The father drives over and ends up being the first detective on the scene. Mm. He sees his son lying there as the paramedics are gathering. So,
wow. Why was Bryant Tinelli murdered? Was he targeted, or was it more of a case of wrong place, wrong time?
This is something about homicide. First of all, a lot of homicides aren't solved, and so you never really know what happens. But even if they are solved, my experience of people who are convicted of killing other people is that they don't reveal a whole lot. It's hard to really tell. They don't always tell the truth. And so in this case, we really don't know. I mean, what we do know is that Bryant had no criminal record. He was not in a gang. He was probably an easy target because of where he was living and what he was wearing. It's really hard to get good solid narratives out of people in situations like this.
You've spent a lot of time on both sides now. You've spent a lot of time with the police detectives. You've spent a lot of time in particular neighborhoods talking with families and witnesses. Where does communication break down between these two groups of people? They both care about crime. What is it they're not understanding about each other?
It's amazing the intersection points. They're in agreement about a lot. You know, there is a ton of work that can be done with conduct, with just the way police talk to people. But in general, I would say that this is bigger than the police department or the so-called communities that they work in. I think that a general public mindset that the police should be predicting or preventing crime is actually more of the culprit here than even some of the very counterproductive attitudes that you sometimes see within police department.
What do you mean?
All through the 90s and into the 2000s, what was it that was forming the contours of police bureaucracies? Well, it was the COPS program. It was getting more uniforms on the street. It was saturation policing. It was targeted policing. It was broken windows. It was sort of this, I think, really unexamined idea that it's a great thing to police with data and to target neighborhoods and saturate them with uniformed officers without really asking, well, what are those uniformed officers doing when they go to the neighborhood to saturate it, to respond to crime, to respond to data? Well, of course, they're just stopping and searching people as opposed to standing back and saying, you know, really what police are doing is enforcing the law. What is law? Why do we need it? How do we build it? And that's the reason I focus on violent crime in my book and the response to violent crime, because in terms of building legitimacy, that is the state's first job, is to catch killers. And that has not been the public discussion. It's not been our discussion as a nation around this problem.
So would you suggest that a better policy would be to lighten up on the preventive work, lighten up on checking on the windows and respond and searches, and instead double down on trying to solve unsolved homicides?
Probably in the real world, this is a continuum. Probably in the real world, there's always going to be a balance between preventive and what I call responsive policing and what others would call reactive policing. But what I would say is it's absurd to expect things to get better in a neighborhood where, as in the case of South Los Angeles, there were from the late 80s to about 2005, 2006, the last time I did this analysis, 40 unsolved homicides per square mile, with some blocks having 3 unsolved homicides in a dozen years, and a single intersection on east of the 110 freeway that had had 8 homicides in 12 years, all of them unsolved. When those are the facts on the ground, when that's the environment, you cannot build an effective legal structure. You cannot let those things go.
Why aren't those murders being solved?
The solve rates are, to be generous, probably around half, maybe a little more than half, but it's just not enough. In some of the wealthy countries of Western Europe, they have 80-90% solve rates for homicide. If we're lumbering along down in the 50s and the 60s, especially when crime is so concentrated, especially when we still have so much hypersegregation, which sort of amplifies everything, you're just not going to get there. You're not going to get to building a lawful environment.
Jill Leovi is a reporter for the LA Times and author of Ghetto Side, a true story of murder in America.